earnings report. And today I want to give a preview on Tesla's earnings. And also I want to try to answer the question, will Tesla survive or thrive in 2020? Now, I think this is kind of pretty much the most important question investors need to answer for 2020 and beyond. Is Tesla the type of company that can really like just take advantage of opportunity no matter what the economic situation is? And if that's the case, then Tesla can be a great investment. So anyways, we're going to dive into it. If you can go ahead and if you can hear this live stream, if you can give a thumbs up, a like, and that will help me to know that, you know, you're watching, and also it'll help the algorithm. But also let me know if the sound is working for you guys, because this is a live stream, it's going out live. All right, I'll continue on. So we have this huge economic shock that's going on right now in the world economy, and it's testing businesses. And it's testing businesses and dividing up businesses into businesses that are kind of like, you know, weak and struggling to survive. So you have some businesses that are going into this category here. And then you have some businesses that are gonna thrive in this kind of struggling and tough economic scenario. So the question is, does Tesla fit into this kind of struggling to survive area, or does Tesla become one of the thriving companies in 2020, even amongst economic kind of struggle? So all the other OEMs, they're pretty much destined and stuck in this struggling to survive section here. So you have GM and Ford and VW, Honda, Toyota, Mercedes, BMW, etc. The list goes on. And there's only one automaker, at least established automaker, that has a chance to become a thing, kind of a company in the midst of this economic situation. That is Tesla. And we're going to look into why that's the case. So in the auto market, you have a house of pain. Like you have major just economic devastation. And here's the cycle. And you've got to understand, I think, step by step to really understand what's happening here. The first thing is you have economic shutdown. So you have businesses shut down left and right all throughout the economy. And that's causing a lot of loss of jobs and unemployment. And people have lower income, meaning they have less money to spend on just goods and services and on extra items like buying another car. More people will want to just continue to stick with their current car, right, for an extended period of time. The other question is there's a lot more uncertainty, like how long is this going to take to overcome, right, the economic struggles. And so with uncertainty, people delay purchases like cars. And so you're going to see the auto market just go down extremely a lot. Next, that will lead to lower auto sales because people have less money to spend and less urgency to spend. People aren't even driving as much as before. Then you have lower revenue for the auto OEMs. So they're not selling as many cars. They're bringing in less money. Then this will lead to lower operating margin or operating profit, and that means they have less money to cover their high expenses. Now, a lot of these auto OEMs have high expenses. They're basically high expenses to operate their businesses, and that's going to lead them to have a greater loss, right? And so while some of these auto OEMs, yes, they did make profit while the economy is doing well, the auto OEMs, when the economy isn't doing well and their revenues tank, they're the first ones to actually have a great loss. And then this leads to a lower investor confidence, meaning investors are kind of skeptical and doubtful about the chances of these companies to grow and survive. And that leads to a higher cost to borrow. And so for these companies to borrow additional money, this is basically going to cost them more. And then all of this makes it even more difficult for these auto OEMs to survive. And so here is this house of pain, and the whole end thing is it's going to be a struggle to survive, right? And it all depends on how long, right, this whole economic struggle, recession, perhaps depression goes on for, right? If there's a quick V-shaped recovery or if it takes a few years to recover. My hunch is that this is just the beginning of a lot of economic pain, and you're going to see this cycle, and you're going to see a lot of news and struggles from auto OEMs. This is the auto market house of pain. All right, so today, just like 20 minutes ago, I pulled up this article that Ford projects an adjusted pre-tax loss of $5 billion in this second quarter. It's like, yeah, and this is just the beginning of pain, right? And you're going to see more and more, I think, auto OEMs, automakers, announce, you know, big losses in the future. It's interesting that Ford's first quarter sales fell 12% compared to a year ago. But if you notice, it was only until really the mid-March time period or so, where at least in the US, that the lockdown started. So they actually only missed out on a few weeks of sales, yet they were down 12.5%, which is, they were probably already on a downturn, and this crisis just hit. Now, this is interesting. It says IHS Market expects worldwide vehicle sales to decline 22% this year to 70 million units, led by a 26.6% fall in the US to 12.5 million units compared to a year ago. In other words, we've got a 27% drop in auto sales projected, right, for the US. And that's a lot, right? That's a huge amount of lost revenue for these companies, and they're going to have a hard time covering their expenses. And so you're looking at these companies incurring big losses for the time going forward. All right. So if we notice with Ford, back in February, this is a tweet I sent out. In February, they raised money at 3.5% five-year bonds. And then 2 months later, in April, they're raising money, five-year bonds again, at 9%, right? So you already have this whole cycle where investors are starting to lose confidence, right? Because these companies are incurring great losses, and it's leading to a higher cost to borrow, which you see in Ford's case, they have to spend basically 9% on five-year bonds, annual rate. And now that this just becomes an increased difficult situation where companies are gonna have a hard time to survive. Now, Tesla's situation is unique, and they're fortunate due to several reasons here. I call it, is it luck or skill, right? Is it fortune or something? But something, you know, a lot of things are going on in Tesla's favor here. The first thing is that Tesla ended 2019 with $6 billion in cash, right? So this is great for Tesla. They just kind of turned the corner in 2019. The second half of 2019, you saw, you know, two consecutive profitable quarters. You had like, you know, $1 billion per quarter or so in cash, free cash flow. Tesla was basically raking in the money. And this was actually, if there was ever a time in Tesla's past 10 years for a pandemic to hit like this one, then this is probably a decent time because Tesla had the cash in hand to begin with. Then in February, Tesla raised an additional $2.3 billion in cash. Right, so you have Tesla at about $8 billion in cash. And this is right before, right, the pandemic hit. And so it's actually another great kind of fortuitous sign for Tesla. All right, number three, Tesla is beginning production ramp on the Tesla Model Y, which is Tesla's most popular vehicle. So in other words, before this time, before right Q1 or end of Q1, Tesla was just had announced Model Y. It's, you know, practically guaranteed that's going to be this most popular vehicle. And right when this pandemic hit, that's when Tesla starts to ramp the production. What this means is that even if Model S and X and Model 3 demand goes down somewhat, they still have a lot of unmet demand for Model Y because they've just started production of Model Y. And so this is great news. And for Tesla's projections, they're projecting Model Y to sell as much as Model S, X, and 3 combined. So even if Tesla sold, let's say, you know, less than, what, 400,000 cars last year, and let's say the demand for Model Y is actually 400,000 cars. I think it's actually more globally, right? This is just in limited geographies. What's going to happen is Tesla has a lot of room, right, to produce and to sell Model Y, even if, right, their initial S, X, and 3 demand goes down a bit, right? This is Model Y. The last thing that is fortunate for Tesla is the Shanghai Gigafactory, or Shanghai Factory, is ramping production of the Made in China Model 3. And in March, they actually produced over 12,000 units, right, just in March, right? That's already at like 150,000 kind of unit per year run rate. And so the China factory is just completely surprising most people on how fast that it's not just been constructed, but how fast that it's been ramping. And at already 150,000 units per year run rate, they can probably ramp that to 250,000, right, per year by the end of the year. And they're going to probably try to expedite the Model Y production, hopefully by the end of the year. Right now, it's planned for early next year. All right, so Tesla has a lot of things going for it right now, and it's got a strong position going into this pandemic, and that's one of the preconditions for Tesla to actually become a company that's going to thrive, right, in this economic struggle. So other auto OEMs, we've got a struggle to survive, yet you have Tesla, right, in a position to thrive, especially with growing demand with Model Y and also with China. Other auto OEMs, you've got shrinking sales. Look, you have 27%, right, of all the auto market projected to tank in the US. So across the board, almost all auto OEMs, without exception, besides Tesla, are going to have shrinking sales. Yet you have Tesla is going to have growing sales, most likely. Tesla will be probably the only automaker with growing sales. Other auto OEMs, they're going to have to reduce their research and development. They're going to basically have to cut expenses and really go into kind of austerity. Yet Tesla is able to continue to grow their plans, right? They're ramping Model Y, they're ramping China, and they're hopefully going to have Battery Day in May to show their plans to ramp gigafactories. And so you have Tesla in this unique position where they're able to be ambitious while other auto OEMs are having to be conservative and having to pull back, right, a lot of their plans. Lastly, other auto OEMs will also have to pull back anything unnecessary, anything that just is not absolutely essential, and they're probably going to have to pull back their autonomous driving plans. And even right now, they're so far behind. But yet with Tesla, they're able to continue development and continue to grow their auto autonomous driving features, right? This is fantastic for Tesla as well. So all of this leads to Tesla's advantage in this situation. And yeah, it's unfortunate for other auto OEMs, but these risks were already inherent in the business model and in the business of OEMs. They just weren't prepared for the next stage. And now with this crisis hits, when this crisis hits, it just kind of shows that all the weaknesses that were already inherent in their business model and in their products. All right, so let's go to some key questions here for Tesla's Q1 earnings. So we have Tesla's Q1 earnings tomorrow. They release the shareholder letter typically after the market close, after 1 p.m. Pacific time typically. Usually it's between 5 and 10 minutes. Sometimes it could be 15, 20 minutes or so. One time it extended over an hour. That's when they changed CFO and the new CFO didn't know the password to upload the earnings report. But anyways, and then at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, they're going to have a conference call with Elon Musk and the key Tesla leadership team. So here are the main questions that we want answered or that I'm looking for Q1 in their earnings and shareholder letter. So the first question is, when will Tesla restart production at Fremont? Now we know already that Tesla was trying to restart their production on May 4th. And the reason was is because the Bay Area shelter-in-place orders ended on May 3rd. However, yesterday we found out that the Bay Area shelter-in-place orders are being planned to be extended past May 4th, right? Probably to the end of May. And so they're going to revise the shelter-in-place orders. They're going to loosen it up slightly, but it's still going to be in effect till end of May. So the big question mark is, will Tesla be able to restart production in their Fremont factory with the new and revised, right, extended shelter-in-place orders in the Alameda County and Bay Area? Or will Tesla be forced to continue their shutdown all throughout May and start production again in June? But the problem is if they start production in June, that's only one quarter left, right, or 1 month left in Q2. And so they're gonna have a hard time really producing and selling many cars in Q2. Sure, they have China, but still it's a lot less in numbers and production out there. All right, the second question here is, how has Tesla used the shutdown time? Meaning when the factory is shut down, we know that there have been some workers there doing some essential work. What has the essential work been? Has it been like retooling? Has there been an increase in the kind of production equipment and of Model Y? Have they been able to expedite Model Y ramp at all? There are a lot of question marks here, and like, how has Tesla taken advantage, right, of the shutdown time recently? Number three is, how fast can Tesla ramp Model Y? And this is an important question because with demand possibly getting hit for the Model S, X, and 3, it's important that Tesla is able to be flexible and to produce the Model Y if need be and in larger numbers. And so we want any information about how Tesla is doing with Model Y ramp. We know that, you know, this is the big priority or a big priority for this year. All right, so number four is how large will China production deliveries be in 2020? So we know that the production is ramping fast, already at 150,000 or so annual run rate. And the question is, will China's demand also equal that? And will there be enough customers, right, to buy up all those cars? And if so, that could be a great, advantage for Tesla to have. All right, number five is, will Tesla drop guidance for 2020? Now, it actually makes sense for me for Tesla to drop guidance just because there's a lot of uncertainty. When you don't know when you're going to restart production, let's say at Fremont, whether you don't know whether it's going to be May 4th or June 4th or so, that's a huge gap, right, of a month or so. And so I'd actually prefer Tesla to remove guidance unless they're super confident that, you know, they're going to restart production on May 4th and go hard, right, and not be subject to more shutdowns. All right, the last question I'm looking for is Battery Day. And is Battery Day still going to happen in May? And yeah, what's Tesla's kind of approach? And if it happens in May, it's good news because it shows that Tesla is still, you know, being aggressive and ambitious, right, with their whole ramping up of new gigafactories, ramping up of probably new cell production. And going to be an exciting event to see. All righty, so here are my Q1 earnings estimates. Now, what I decided to do was I decided to kind of just write it down because I usually typically do stuff on spreadsheets and I create kind of my own kind of estimates. But I realized a lot of times when you put it on a spreadsheet, you can get into this thing where you don't really understand the main kind of key core components, right, of a company. And so a lot of times I think it's easier just to write it down in terms of at least trying to understand it. Warren Buffett is famous to saying that for any company that you invest in, you should be able to write down on one piece of paper, right, the reasons why you're investing in a company and the company's basic finances. So basically, yeah, that's what you should do. You shouldn't have to rely on, right, a spreadsheet to come up with earnings projections. It should be kind of straightforward. So here are kind of the key factors for Tesla's earnings. So first, you have deliveries. So we know in Q1, ending March 31st, 2020, Tesla delivered 88,400 vehicles. And from that, they produced actually about 15,000 more than that at 102,000 vehicles produced. All right, so the revenue, let's go back the last three quarters to check out revenue. In Q2 of 2019, they had 95,000 deliveries, right, of cars, and they had a revenue of $6.35 billion. Okay, that's Q2. Q3, you had deliveries of 97,000 vehicles, and then you had a revenue of $6.3 billion. And then in Q4 2019, this was last quarter, you had 112,000 deliveries, and then you had $7.4 billion. Now, the estimate here now for revenue that I'm giving is Q1, we had 88,000 deliveries. So we basically know it's going to be lower than Q2 and Q3 because Q2 and Q3 had 95,000 or 97,000 vehicles, right? At $6.3 billion revenue or so. So with about, you know, let's say about 7,000 or 8,000 less vehicles, then you're going to have a lower amount of revenue. If you times it about, you know, average sales price about 45,000 or 50,000 per unit, you're going to have, you know, a lower revenue price of about $400 million. So I put down a $5.9 billion estimated revenue for 2019 Q1. Okay, so this is kind of the important number here. All right, let's move on to margin. So the last three quarters, Q2 in 2019, you saw margin of 14.5%. And then In Q3 of 2019, it went up to 18.9%. We're talking about overall margin now. And with Tesla, you have this automotive margin, but you also have like their other, you know, solar and services. Usually their services are negative margins. So combining kind of all the margins. In Q4, you had 18.8%. In Q1, I'm estimating about, let's say, 18% margin. It could be actually slightly lower than this, but the reason why it's going to be lower, I think, is you have a few factors. Number one is you have the Model Y ramp. Whenever you're ramping new vehicles, the first like few thousand vehicles, they're probably going to be negative margin, and so you're going to take a hit on gross margin overall. And also, they're ramping up their Shanghai factory, right? And because they're still ramping up, you're going to have probably not negative margin for Shanghai, but you're going to have kind of low margin, you know, maybe between 5 and 15% or so during Q1. And so that has a negative kind of pressure on margin. So you're going to have, you know, maybe 17-18%, right, gross margin or so. And that will lead to operating margin or operating profit, right? And if you take 18% of $5.9 billion, you get about $1 billion, right, of operating profit. So that's the money that Tesla's able to take, right, after they sell all their cars. They've got $1 billion left over. And now they've got to pay their operating expenses. So let's look at their operating expenses. If you take the average of the last three quarters, Tesla has averaged about $1 billion or so in operating expenses, right? And this is divided up into R&D and sales, general, and administration. So I'm saying, let's say they keep their $1 billion in expenses. Now, it could be a little bit higher, it could be a little lower. Next, you're looking at basically what their operating, their operating margin was actually $1 billion before. But now we're looking at, you have their $1 billion in profit, right, in gross profit, that they're doing, and then you have their $1 billion in operating expenses. So basically, in terms of operating profit, this is before kind of, you know, income, before taxes and such, and interest expense. You have basically their breaking even at operating profit. If you add their interest expenses and etc., which is about $180 million or so, you have Tesla coming out to be about at $180 million loss. So actually, let's take a more simpler look at this. You have $5.9 billion in revenue, right? And you have, this is gross profit, sorry. This is, you have $1 billion in gross profit, and then you have $1 billion in operating profit, right? And that basically makes your company like break even. And then you've got $180 million or so in interest expenses, right? Tesla has a bunch of bonds and debt. And so you have $180 million net loss or so. Now, this is obviously a flexible number because there's lots of things that will sway it one way or the other. But in Tesla's case for Q1, I'm expecting a loss of about $150 to $200 million. Now, it could sway, you know, a little bit higher than that. So maybe $150 to $220 or so, something within that range I would expect as normal for Tesla. Now, there could be a couple of surprises for Tesla. And the first surprise is that you could see some additional revenue from like full self-driving, right? And that could, you know, show up increasing the operating margin, etc. And the second thing is you could see some fiat credit sales, right? Regulatory credit sales. We know that they signed a big contract, and it's possible that you have some extra money flowing in from that. However, barring any of these kind of like one-time unexpected surprises, right, we're looking at, I think, a loss of about $150 to $200 million. That's about $1 per share. Now, a couple other things we want to look for in Tesla's earnings is we want to look at their cash position. Now, they had $6.3 billion at the end of 2019, and they raised $2.3 billion at the end of, or in February. And so you're looking at Tesla, they should have, you know, good 8.5, but you're going to have Tesla probably have a negative cash flow, and here's the reason why, for Q1. Is their production exceeded deliveries for this last quarter, meaning they produced about 15,000 more units than they actually delivered, and that affects their cash flow meaning they're having to actually fork over, you know, more money before receiving it from customers. So we're probably going to see a negative cash flow. I'm expecting about $500 million or so. I'm expecting a cash position of Tesla at the end of Q1 to be about $7.5 billion. And that's great news because Tesla has a strong balance sheet. They've got, you know, a lot of decent cash on hand. And Tesla also has decently low operating expenses, meaning they've got $1 billion, right, per quarter in operating expenses. And if they have $7.5 billion, right, they can go quite a way. Now, this isn't the complete picture because Tesla still has some other expenses, which is called cost of revenue, which are the expenses it takes to make the cars, right? And so if they're not making the cars, there's actually some additional expenses, but we can go into that later if you have any questions. All right, so one other question that people are asking a lot about is S&P 500. There was a recent article saying that Barclays is thinking that, you know, Tesla might qualify for the S&P 500 after this quarter. And when I work out the numbers, I'm just not seeing this, right? I mean, actually, last December, I put out a video saying that I thought 2020 was going to be the year that Tesla was included in the S&P 500, and I started working out the numbers. However, with this pandemic crisis, it's hit Tesla in a way where, yeah, it's going to be difficult this quarter. And so to qualify for the S&P 500, Tesla needs their last quarter to be profitable, meaning their Q1, like this quarter that they're reporting tomorrow, needs to be a profitable quarter. But also, they need to be cumulatively profitable over the last four quarters. So Q1, if you add that with their additional previous three quarters, the total amount needs to be basically a positive profit, right, over those past four quarters. So let's look at the past three quarters and see what's going on. In Q1 of 2019, you had a $408 million loss, right? And this is kind of like the tough one. You have to cancel, X out that loss, right, in order to become profitable. In Q3, you had a $140 million profit. And in Q4, you had a $105 million profit. So if you take $400 million loss, right, add in 143 and 105, you get about $160 million. So that's the magic number that Tesla needs in Q1 to qualify to be added to the S&P 500. So they need $160 million, this is GAAP profit, to be eligible, to be qualified, to be included in the S&P 500. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important because of a few reasons. It's because the S&P 500 is tracked by so many funds, and there's so much money into the S&P 500, and almost any index fund is gonna track the S&P 500 or some, you know, version of it. And because of that, if Tesla's added to the S&P 500, you're gonna have a lot of funds that are kinda have to buy Tesla and their weight of the S&P 500 to basically have a fund in their funds that track the S&P 500. So you have a lot of people buying into Tesla, a lot of funds, and this is possibly gonna increase the share price. I think historically it's about 5 or 10% increase or so. However, in Q1, this is a very unlikely scenario, as I shared before. I'm expecting, you know, about $180 million loss. And so to get $160 million profit, that's like a $300 million, you know, difference or so, which is possible, you know, who knows? Tesla could pull off a miracle. That's gonna be interesting to see what's gonna happen tomorrow. So earnings, you know, is interesting. It's like every earnings report is different, you know, and every earnings report gives, you know, a surprise, whether it's a small surprise or a big surprise. So tomorrow's earnings report is gonna be one of those things we're gonna look for. So this is one of the question marks, you know, is Tesla gonna be able to pull off a surprise $160 million profit or not? If they're not able to, then they can possibly get into the S&P 500, at least qualify, based off a Q2 profit, right? And so it all depends on how much Q1 their earnings, whether it's what type of profit or loss they show. All right, so some questions. Tesla ended today, closed today at $769. We have a market cap of $141 billion. Personally, my personal opinion is that Tesla is a bit optimistically valued right now. I shared a video about a month ago on how to, actually more than a month ago, this is like before the kind of the crisis really hit home for the US, before the crisis, of how to value Tesla. And I shared how you could use a valuation of estimating kind of a million kind of cars delivered in about a couple, 2 years or so, and work backward to come up with a valuation of about like $140-150 billion. That was before the pandemic, before this whole economic crisis hit. And so I think with the economic challenges ahead, I think it's, Tesla, in my opinion, is, it's great for me as a shareholder, as a longtime shareholder, very overweight in Tesla. It's fantastic to see Tesla, right, in the 700s, high 700s. And I hope they blow out earnings tomorrow. However, I'm being realistic here, right? They've got some headwinds. All the numbers show that it's most likely they're going to take a loss. They're not going to be included in the S&P 500. And Tesla is a more of a long-term story. This is a company that we're looking at growth years and years out, right? They've got some great technologies with autopilot or autonomous driving. They have new vehicles, right? The Model Y, Cybertruck, Semi. They've got a lot of great things in coming their way. And so anyways, yeah, this is more of a long-term story. And so tomorrow's earnings, it's less of a short-term issue, and it's more about how Tesla will address, right, their long-term issues. How they'll not just survive, but how will they thrive in this pandemic, and what's going to happen. So, last thing before we go into some questions is the Bay Area shelter-in-place order that's being extended. What's happening here? Well, they're going to release, they're saying, by the end of this week or so. They're going to release a more detailed order that extends the shelter-in-place order. And so they said it's going to have some limited easing of specific restrictions for a small number of lower-risk activities. So the question mark is, does Tesla fit in to this definition, right, of lower-risk activities, right? Will they allow people somewhat to go back to work if those workplaces like take stringent kind of controls of masks and maybe taking temperatures, right, social distancing within the factories, etc. So this is probably the biggest question that we're going to be facing in tomorrow's earnings. Like, when will Tesla ramp production? All right. So let's go ahead and I'm going to. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pause this feed for about like 30 seconds, maybe a minute, and I'm going to take some time to read some questions from you guys, and then I'm going to come back in about a minute or so and try to answer some of you guys' questions. All right, here it is. Oh, wow, actually, it's still going on. Okay, this is like interesting. So we'll go ahead and answer some people's questions right now. All right, the first question is from Sergio. I plan to do a long call option on Tesla today. What do you think, Dave? Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're a short-term trader and you really understand like the ups and downs, even that, right, is risky. You gotta really understand, right, option premiums. And the biggest thing with options is it's time. You've gotta get the movement correct within that certain period of time. And so if you don't have options experience, I encourage you to do so with a fake account or start very small, right? Take like, you know, some very small percentage and try options. With that, I encourage you to do some reading, read some options books as well, and watch a ton of videos. And but there's a lot of interesting things with options, right? Options is an amazing, powerful instrument that if done well, you could actually do very well. If done not well, it can incur a lot of pain. So anyways, be careful out there and do your homework. Yeah. All right. This is from CM. What do you think will be the stock price in December 2020? Yeah, I mean, it's tough to predict, with that type of accuracy, like what the stock price is going to be at the end of the year, because you've got to predict the economy, you've got to predict, what the Fed's going to do, you've got to predict the overall stock market. So anyone who really tells you what, they think the stock price is going to be in December 2020, better have a lot of different inputs, right, into that, right? And those inputs can change over time. And so that's kind of my thing. I would personally, I would expect, Tesla to be something between 500 and 1,000, in December 2020. That's my expectation. But it could always change, right? It could always change because there's a lot of inputs, right, going into that that are also changing too. All right, Stuart Abel says, "Hi Dave, what are the costs if they are not producing?" Well, first of all, they still are working, right? You have all these engineers that are still working, even though, right, their factory is not producing. You've got all of, right, Tesla's autonomous driving people working. You got all their software engineers working. You've got all their, engineers working on cars. They're still working from home, right? They're not just laid off or so. They still have a job as long as they can work from home. And then, so you've got all those operating expenses, so and it's quite sizable. Sure, you might be able to furlough, right, some of your, salespeople, but you still have, right, service center expenses, et cetera. And then you've got actually these different set of expenses that go into the cost of revenue, which don't go into operating expenses. So there, when they build a car, let's say there's $6 billion in revenue, and you have a 20%, let's say, gross margin, right? Oh, I said 18%, right? Part of the 82% or so in cost is labor, right? I mean, there's also parts, right, and depreciation for all your equipment, all this stuff, factory, et cetera. But part of that, of the cost of revenue or the cost to build the cars is the labor to go that goes into building that. So even if Tesla isn't building cars, right, they still have those people to pay, and even if they furlough those people, there's still costs, right, in terms of, it's not going to be like just going from 100 to $0, right, in expenses right off the bat. So yeah, you're going to have Tesla, my estimate is even without producing any cars, they probably will still have like $1 billion of expenses, right? They've got their current engineers. Sure, they could furlough a bunch of people, but they still have some costs just to keep the factory just, going, and says also to pay some workers that they need to pay. And so, yeah, at $7 billion cash reserve, they could probably go 7 quarters or so without producing anything. That's my guesstimate right now. All right. Yeah, the stocks for life says, Dave, you missed the energy business. Yeah, actually, no, it's actually included in the revenue figure. I actually, on purpose, I decided to, for the revenue figures that I kind of shared over here. Yeah, that's automotive revenue and solar or energy and service. It's all the revenue included as well. I think it's easier for me to or to convey. It's easier for people to understand just kind of revenue as one thing. And yeah, so it's not there. It's not missed. It's actually the energy business is in, right, the Q1 summary. All right, so we have a question by Neil Fan. Hi Dave, what do you think is the fair price for Tesla at this point? Yeah, this is a challenging question because you have Tesla as well as a lot of companies. They've rebounded from kind of the March 23rd bottom that we saw at that time, and a lot of companies have doubled, right? And in the case of Tesla, Tesla has actually doubled in the past month or so, which is amazing. And you have a lot of companies, let's say Amazon, going back to right up to their high. Google had earnings report today, and Google is just showing that they have an amazing business. I mean, they've got like search, they've got Android, they've got YouTube, they've got Google Cloud, and right, Apple is going to be churning along, and you've got a lot of money on the sidelines that are wanting to invest in something. And I think kind of the big question is, with the Fed printing so much money, and again on March 23rd, like, that's kind of the key date. That's when we hit the 18,000 something, you know, bottom that we saw right now, and that's the same that same day that the Fed said that they're going to have unlimited quantitative easing. And I think that's interesting because when the Fed signaled that they're going to do anything and everything they could to print money to prop up things, right? That's when you saw the market do this very fast rebound. And you have to ask yourself, where is that money going? Where is the trillions of dollars of money that the Fed is printing? And where is that going? And how is that going to affect, let's say, equity prices, but also bond prices or real estate prices or even other goods? And I think in that type of view, and only in that type of view, can you really look at Tesla and what its fair price is. And so, in my opinion, I think, you know, you have with the Fed quantitative easing going unlimited, you have this interesting situation where now bonds become less attractive because the Fed is printing so much money. Now money becomes a little bit less valuable. And what are bonds? Bonds is just an IOU for money a little bit later. And so sure, you've got a couple percent interest rate that you're getting for, you know, money, let's say you get back a couple years later, but you're not that interested in that because the Fed is printing so much money. That money that you're owed in that bond is now less attractive. And so bonds in general, I think, lose a lot of their attractiveness when the Fed goes on this huge printing spree. And I think the companies that probably do well, or the assets that increase in value, is as the Fed prints this money and these banks, right, you know, dole out this money, where is all this money going to? Where is it being parked? And I think a lot of it is being parked in like stable companies, right? Stable equities. Because let's say, hypothetically, the Fed prints a ton of money, right? And the value of money in some senses goes down. I say that because it doesn't necessarily have to trigger inflation. It's, you know, with all this quantitative easing stuff, it's like you can manage possible, right, low inflation. But what happens is you could actually kind of lower the value of money in a broader sense, I think. And when that happens, you could see a lot of the equities of certain stable and growing companies actually go up because, you know, their revenue can actually grow up because, right, money, the value of money goes down. So therefore, you know, you increase, right, your revenue or the amount of revenue that's coming in. And I think this is why you have, in the case where you have Amazon and Google and Apple and a lot of these big companies really holding strong during this whole crash and epidemic and crisis, it's because these companies, right, they're in great position to have strong balance sheets to withhold, right, hold strong during this crisis, but also to grow their income over time. And whatever the value of money is, it doesn't matter for these companies. It will reflect in their balance sheets. It will reflect in their revenue and in their profits. And so their profits and revenue will just grow over time. And so in terms of going back to Tesla, what is the fair price of Tesla? I think with the Fed printing so much money, I think it's actually kind of resetting the equity prices of certain kind of very desirable companies, right? If your company has a bad balance sheet and has low growth, then yeah, you're just like, whatever, your stock is cut in half or even less. Like, look at Ford and GM and all these companies, right? All the auto OEMs are being cut. But if you have a good balance sheet and you have decent growth on hand, then you're going to be rewarded by the market because there are very few places to put people's money, right? And trillions of dollars are being printed. They need to go somewhere. If they're not going to bonds, right, and bonds aren't that attractive, they have to go into something, equities. And if a lot of these companies' balance sheets aren't very attractive, it's going to go into the companies whose balance sheets and growth prospects are decent. And therefore, that's where you get this kind of disconnect, where people might say, oh, Tesla is overpriced right now, right? Because it's almost as if the crisis never happened. But there was a behind-the-scenes financial type of flow of money, right? You've had this huge amount of trillions and trillions of dollars of Fed quantitative easing and money printing, basically. And you've got to follow the flow of the money, where it's going and how it's impacting, right, the prices of different assets. Because of that, I think there's, in a sense, probably going to be a repricing or a rethinking of kind of the best assets, the best equities out there, stable balance sheets, decent growth. And that's why I think, you know, companies like Google and Apple, Facebook to a certain extent, Amazon, etc., like these companies I would definitely not bet on, a bet against, right? These are companies actually I picked up in the recent weeks as well, to expand my portfolio. All right. So for Luke, says, can I change my Cybertruck order for Model Y? Yeah, just go to your Tesla account, cancel your Model Y, or cancel your Cybertruck order and buy a Model Y. And Luke also asks, do you think Tesla slows down Gigafactory 4 expansion to reduce CapEx spend? This is in Europe. Europe is going, Germany is going a little bit slow with their whole permit and foundation. So I think Tesla will spend as fast as they can, right, in Europe, because that's super critical, super strategic for Tesla. Regarding their kind of US factory, their next Gigafactory, I think Tesla also is going to be aggressive with that too, because it takes a while just to, like, you know, get the permits and to buy the land. And, you know, you're not going to spend a ton of money during that first, you know, initial several months to a year. So I think Tesla, yeah, definitely is going to continue to be aggressive with their rollout of Gigafactories. All right. We have Dr. Dre. What is your favorite thing about Tesla? So for Tesla, I think my favorite thing about Tesla is its ambition, right? I mean, you've got Elon Musk at the forefront, but if you look at a lot of other companies, they just don't have, like, the hunger, the ambition, right? That just wanting to go for it and do something that just other people aren't doing, and to really achieve some amazing goals, right? There's so many companies that are just trying to do, like, better than mediocre, right? They're just trying to make some money. They're just trying to do so-called business or something. But here you have Tesla come along, and they're not just, like, trying to do business or make money, but they've got really aspirational, ambitious goals. We're talking about, you know, energy production that's going to just blow your mind, right? You're talking about millions and millions of vehicles. You're talking about reducing air pollution, making the world go into sustainable energy. And that's, I think, could be just the beginning for Tesla as well. And in terms of just ambition, you know, like, one of the things that I was doing is I was looking into the gene editing companies, and I was looking at biotech space a bit the past couple of weeks, looking through a bunch of annual reports and CEO interviews. And one of the things I was looking for is I'm looking for kind of like that ultra ambitious, focused kind of CEO and company, right? And it's extremely hard to find. I mean, you would think that, let's say, in gene editing or CRISPR technology, you'd have these really ambitious, right, CEOs and stuff. And there is ambition in itself just within the technology, right? These companies do have ambitious goals, but it's the way you roll out your goals, right? How strategic, how focused, right? And not just these long-term lofty goals like 10 years down the road, but what are your goals the next 1 year out, right? Are they super ambitious? And I think, like, for Tesla, it's hard to find companies that have such, not just ambitious goals 10 years out, but ambitious goals 1 year out or 2 years out. And it just drives Tesla. It's an exciting company, right? It's an exciting company to watch because of their ambition, I think. All right, Alex asks, if we head into a recession, do you think that will affect Tesla stock negatively, or will it remain relatively unchanged? Yeah, well, it's no longer if we're headed into recession. The whole question is if this recession goes on, like, multi-year or not, and becomes a depression, right? A recession is basically 2 quarters, right, of negative GDP growth. We won't know that until, obviously, it's already happened. But for all purposes, pretty much guaranteed, we're in a big recession. We're in a major recession, right? Unemployment is just skyrocketing over 20%. I mean, we're talking about unemployment that could actually go much higher than the Great Depression, right? This is a huge economic crisis and huge economic shock. And yes, it will impact Tesla, right? It will impact their demand, I think. However, I did share in this whole video how Tesla has certain factors that allow it to possibly thrive, right, in this kind of crisis or difficult situation as well. Now, Tesla stock is different, right? People think that, you know, things are correlated in some ways, and sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't, right? And a lot of people, they're confused with the stock market because they think, wait a minute, the economy, isn't it going to get worse? Isn't the economy just going down the hill? And why is the stock market going from like 18,500 to 24,000 just within a month or so, right? It's just like kind of mind-boggling for people, and people are like, oh my gosh, this is like, it's almost as if the crisis never hit, right? We're approaching stock prices from a year ago. And that's kind of, I think, an oversimplistic view when you think that the stock market is correlated with the economy, right? The economy does well, the stock market goes up. The economy just goes down and the stock market goes down, right? And you can also look at that like company-wise, right? Company does well, stock market goes, or their stock goes up. The company does bad, their stock goes down. However, there are times where exceptional, unique times where sometimes certain things trump, right? The economic correlation or even the company performance correlation to the stock price. And I think that's actually what's happening right now. It's the Fed. You know, when you have unlimited quantitative easing, you have trillions and trillions of dollars that they're printing, you've got to figure out where this money's going and how it's affecting prices. And my best kind of like guess of where this money is going is it's actually going first into the best, most stable companies, right? The best balance sheets, stable incomes. And then it's also, I think, trickling into some good growth companies that have great balance sheets as well and good prospects for growth. And so got to factor that in. And that's why even if the economy tanks, right, like you would expect Tesla to tank as well, right? I mean, who's not expecting the economy to get worse over the next 6 months, right? In terms of just, you know, its impact. I'm sure there are people still expecting this V-shaped recovery, but the reality is we've got this virus situation on our hands for quite a while. And so a lot of people are expecting the economy to go down. And so you expect Tesla stock to go down, right? And that's what everyone is thinking, right? Everyone is thinking when Tesla was at 350 or 400 bucks, that Tesla was going to go down continually because the economy was going to go down. But that's the thing. It sometimes is not related. And so while I could see Tesla go down over time, and I would expect it to go down with the economy, I think there are exceptions to this. And as if the Fed continues to spend trillions and trillions of dollars to prop up the economy, and I think they're going to start to prop up lots of different parts of the economy. You're going to start to see like trillions of dollars going out to state and local governments. You're going to see just different industries get bailed out, etc. We're going to have probably the biggest bailout in history, right? Just going throughout different industries. This is an amazing time we live in, a very, very a volatile time. And I wouldn't be surprised if Tesla stock actually also goes up as well because of this whole situation. And anyways, that's actually kind of another case to be a long-term investor, kind of to get into Tesla at a good price where you think that, you know, it's a decent valuation or even low valuation, and just to hold on without trading, because there's a lot of complexity, you know? You know, if you're a long-term holder, you don't have to worry about so much, right, trying to trade in and out of a position. On that note, like a lot of people, they sold Tesla, let's say $400, $500, $600. They thought it would go down even to $200 or $300 or something. It never did. And as Tesla's going up, they're just scared, right, to get in because they think it's going to go down again. And then they end up not having the same amount of stock, right, the number of shares that they did before. And now they're stuck and they don't know what to do, right? They're hoping that Tesla would go down. And that's possible, right? Tesla could go down and they could make out better for it, but there's also, you know, a lot of complexity and risk that you incur by trading in and out. I think it could be worth it if you're doing it in a non-taxable account as well. In the taxable account, you have to worry about your tax bracket and also your state taxes and etc. All right, Tomer says, Dave, I think Tesla will do 550,000 cars delivered this year, and 1 million in 2021, and 2 million in 2022. Giga Berlin will be up late 2021. What do you think? Yeah, I don't think we're doing 550,000 cars in this year. Work out the numbers. I worked out the numbers in one of my videos. It's called the Tesla Shanghai video, and it comes out to be about 440,000 cars that I was predicting. If Tesla somehow is able to push Fremont production really on May 4th, then I think there's a, you know, growing possibility that we can do 500,000 cars if everything works out, right? There's no further shutdown, etc. But I think we've got to err on the side of caution. I would actually expect about 440,000 cars and probably, you know, a good, you know, maybe 750 cars, 750,000 cars for the following year. I don't think we get a million cars in 2021. I think it's 2022 at the earliest. All right, Amir Vora says, you talk about hitting guidance on production, but what about demand if recession hits? Yeah, again, demand is gonna, I think, get hit for the Model SX and Model S, X, and 3. However, as I shared before, Model Y is a new car, and the demand probably exceeds all the other cars. So that's kind of the fortunate thing for Tesla, is they aren't relying just on their past cars. They've got new cars that can stir new demand. All right, here we have Gilbert Garcia. He says, hi, Dave, thanks for the video. Can you say what is the fair price to buy Tesla? $769 is too expensive. Yeah, here's the thing. Here's the difficult part is when people don't do their own valuations of a company, then they don't really know when to buy, because when things get really bad and nasty in the market, it's usually because there's some existential risk, meaning there's a good reason why the whole market's tanked like 30, 40% or 50% to date, right? And people are scared, and there's probably good reason to be scared. And so the only way that I know of personally, actually there's different ways. You could be completely, you know, just do the opposite of what you feel, right? You feel a lot of fear and you just do the opposite. And that could work out actually quite often for people. But however, I think probably the most reliable way is actually to rely on valuations, right? And to have napkin math. Like, check out my video, How to Value Tesla, doing napkin math. This was about maybe like a month and a half ago. I mean, this is such a crucial video because it shows you how to take napkin math, how to insert your projections of what Tesla's gonna do a couple years out, and how to come up with a valuation. And based upon the multiples too, you could actually, you know, in a recession or if the multiples go down, you could see what type of valuation that people might give. And that will give you, I think, a decent idea of when you want to enter a stock, not just with Tesla, but with other stocks. Yeah, I personally thought, a friend asked me as it was going down, right, what do you think is a good price to buy at that time? And I thought 400. And so, you know, I put 400 and he was saying, oh, do you think 200 or 300? I'm like, hey, you know, you could try to wait for a great stock to get down to like unreasonable, crazy prices, but you might be waiting forever, right? And even 400 at that time, I thought, you know, was, but for me, 400 was just purely based upon, you know, looking at market cap and looking on projections, right? I thought that was a good price. But I think the times have changed a bit. We'll see what happens. And also it depends on your time horizon, like how long are you trying to keep this? Is this just a flip or short-term thing? How much money, what percent of your portfolio you're putting into the stock, right? It also depends like how good of a deal you really need, right? And yeah, so there's a lot of factors into what I think a good price for Tesla is. But anyways, personally, I'm not selling much of my Tesla stock. Over the past few months, I've probably sold, you know, less than 10% or so of my Tesla that I've held, you know, since, let's say, whatever Tesla stock I've held last at the end of last year, which was, you know, quite a bit. Yeah, I've sold less than 10%, probably closer to 5% or so, maybe, yeah, between 5 or 10% or so. And that's because I strongly believe in the company. I strongly believe in their growth prospects. And I think even though there could be short-term times where Tesla could seem kind of lofty in its valuation, hey, wait a year or two, you know, like think about it. Like if this company executes, like what are the projections going forward, right? I think people are so focused just on like today's valuation, today's stock price. If you look forward, you could see, hey, you know, in a few years, maybe 700 isn't that big of a deal. But again, another good video is how to time stock purchases. That's one of my earlier videos, maybe about 3 months ago. That's a fantastic video, I'm telling you, like about how you can get in at the right time. Watch that video, how to time stock purchases for 10x gains. A great video on how to figure out when to time purchases. All right, Jay Maddell, Maddley says, Dave, can you speculate on Tesla splitting anytime soon? I'm assuming you're talking about stock. Right, Tesla splitting stock. Yeah, you know, I don't know if Tesla needs to split their stock, you know, but I would imagine at a certain point, maybe they do split, maybe after, they could do it now, but you know, once their stock goes up to like 2,000 or 3,000, they probably might want to do like a split or so, maybe a 5-to-1 or 10-to-1. Yeah, it was interesting. I have a friend who has, you know, some shares that he's held for quite a while, and he keeps on asking me every 3 or 4 months. He's like, Dave, like, you know, should I sell? And like, he gives me all these like, he'll replay all the FUD, not the FUD, but these concerns, right, of Tesla and stuff. And I've always had this perspective of, rather than trying to preserve gains, I'm trying to maximize the number of shares I have long term. And I just don't want to have like I don't want to have less shares than I was planning for, right, long term, meaning there's a certain number of shares that I had set out to hold for this company, and I want to hold that for, you know, a long time. And what's great about a growing company is, as the stock price grows, as the market cap grows, it could split the stock. It means zero for the company, meaning the market cap remains the same. It's just maybe, you know, psychologically, there's a, you know, whatever, a smaller number. Maybe it might be a little bit easier for people to buy into stock, but now there's fractional shares, so it might not matter as much. But regardless, what's great is, as if a company, like, let's say, does a 10-to-1, you know, stock split, hey, you have 10 times the amount of shares, and sure, they're worth, you know, 1/10, but psychologically, it's like great, you know, it's like, hey, you've like somehow multiplied your shares. And it's just a psychological benefit, I think, of holding for a company long term. All right, target price is 900 for tomorrow after ER. Yeah, I mean, good luck. I mean, no, seriously, like, anything could happen, right? Tesla, like, if they actually do a $160 million profit, right, that means they qualify for the S&P 500. Yeah, I think we will see 900s tomorrow. But I doubt it. I think it's unlikely due to, you know, the calculations I shared in this video. All right, John Lamprino says, what is more important for the earnings call? Or what is more important, the earnings call or battery day going forward? You know, going forward, they're two completely different things. The earnings call really is more of a short to midterm thing, right? It's really about what Tesla's doing this year, this quarter, right, next few quarters. It's really to get like a status update, you know, of what Tesla's doing. And the biggest question is when they're going to restart production in Fremont factory. Now, the battery day, that's more of a long-term pitch, right? That's a 5-to-10-year type of, you know, vision casting kind of presentation. And I think most people are more excited about Battery Day because you want to see the vision of Tesla 5 to 10 years down the road. And I think we're going to see a concrete roadmap to 10 or 20 gigafactories, right, in the next decade or so, and a clear path to at least 10 million cars by 2030 or so. You're going to see concrete plans for new cell production batteries, powertrain that lasts 1 million miles as well. I think you're gonna see a ton of a great in a kind of showing of what Tesla's already worked on, right, and where they're headed. And combine battery day with autonomy day, and you've got, like, you know, a ton of stuff for Tesla to do next decade, right? It just is really exciting. So yeah, battery day for sure is the more important, I think, long-term presentation, especially for investors to understand, you know, what's going on. Alex Chabanoff says, hi, Dave. Did you start your investments with looking for 10X companies directly? And do you recommend that for beginners? Yeah, if you haven't watched my last video, it's called How to 100x Your Money, or The Power of Compound Growth. Like, that's a super important video. I need to do actually more videos on that topic because, I started some nibbling into stock investing, you know, probably 20 years ago or more than that, actually, back before the last dot-com bubble in 1998, 1999. But I didn't really get serious into investing until like 2008 or so. I spent a year of researching. I wanted to really nail investing. I wanted to kind of find what I thought would be the holy grail of investing. And I just did kind of a deep dive. I started reading a bunch of stuff and all these authors and investing, you know, methods. And I started to realize, like, hey, you know, people are getting different returns, right? Different annual returns. And some people are suggesting you get a 5% return, but some people are getting a 20% or 25% annual return. And I'm like, what's the difference? Like, and if you work out the numbers, the people who get 20 to 25% annual return, like, right, the assets just increase tremendously fast versus those who, let's say, get a 5% return. And I started to kind of look into that more and more, and I started to see, yeah, some of the best hedge funds could get over 20%, some of the, you know, private ones, etc. And I started to look into ways, like, how can I reliably, right, get kind of super high compounded growth? And I spent like a good year, you know, looking into that. And I came up with kind of like a few things, but, you know, from that came up with my whole focus on investing, which is, yeah, I want to get outsized gains, you know, but I also want to mitigate the risk as much as possible. And this is kind of like a unique strategy in a sense. I know, sure, everyone wants outsized gains and mitigate risk, etc., but I really want outsized gains, you know, meaning like not just the typical 5 or 10%, but yeah, I'm really looking to compound, you know, assets at least, right, 24%. I'm looking to do 10x on my assets over, you know, a period of 5 to 10 years. Fortunately, I've been able to do that for the past decade or so. We'll see, you know, how that plays out going forward. But yeah, in terms of what do I recommend for beginners? For me, part of the process to do this was just to be exposed to the power of investing. And that's what I'm trying to do in this whole channel. I encourage you to watch all my videos from episode number one to the current, because it all helps to get kind of the insight of what the true potential of investing is. I think it's been kind of like blurred out and distorted by modern kind of investing thought, which I think completely misses, I think, the potential and the true kind of essence of investing. However, for me also, I think it also means that, you know, for when I started out, probably in 2008 or so, really getting serious, is I realized I had a lack of assets, meaning I had some assets, but I didn't have enough assets to really take advantage of compound growth in a way that really mattered. And so for me, part of that whole process of investing was actually to create assets faster than just so-called investing. And that actually entails starting a business, right? Starting a business where there was a lot of opportunity. And I actually am very encouraging of people to look into kind of to be countercultural, and that's another whole huge theme of my channel, to have independent thinking, to look at things clearly and deeply. And when you see a situation like today's economy, and you see like the devastation and people without jobs, unemployed, massive businesses taking hits, oftentimes the natural reaction is to retreat and to just to make certain conclusions that there is no opportunity, or now is the time to just retreat and to curl up, right, and just to survive and to protect yourself. However, I think there's a counter kind of intuitive thing to do, which is to say, hey, where is opportunity, right? Because there's a massive change, massive shift in behavior because of this whole pandemic and these lockdowns, where are there opportunities, and can I start something small on a limited basis to serve people, to help people, to create some product or service that can really embrace the opportunity and help people in this situation? And I think if you do that, you have opportunity to create assets, right? And a lot of times we think that, you know, investing just as is passive, just whatever, index fund, whatever. But I think when you have limited assets, I think it's important to be open and actually explore opportunities to grow your assets quicker than actually what maybe more of a passive investing approach would entail. So anyways, I would love to kind of share more about kind of my entrepreneurial journey, my thoughts on how to start businesses. But I just want to first open people's mind to kind of that opportunity. All right, Joe Kim, what do you think about guidance for total sales in 2020 will be if Fremont opens back up on May 4th? Yeah, I think if Tesla is able to open up back up on May 4th, Tesla will be very optimistic. I think they're going to try to shoot for 500,000 cars. If they can't open up on May 4th, then it's going to get kind of messy, right? Tesla will probably withdraw their guidance, especially if they have to open up in June or so. We're looking at, you know, I think it's it's not realistic to assume they can reach their guidance at all, right? Unless they really need to, I think, open up on May 4th to have a chance. All right. I'm going to take a few more questions here. Dominic says, at which time is the release? Typically, Tesla announces or releases their shareholder letter after 1 p.m. Pacific time, after market close. That will be tomorrow, so you can take a look at that. I'm also going to probably do another live stream tomorrow after the shareholder letter gets released, so probably 2 p.m. Tomorrow Pacific time. I'll try to go on live and I'll go through the shareholder letter. I'll kind of highlight what I think are the most important parts. And the key, I think, to understand the shareholder letter is to understand what this means for Tesla overall, right? It's not just like glancing at it and say, okay, whatever, but it's like really asking the tough questions, like, what does this really mean? Because every company faces challenges, right? And we've got to understand those challenges and see what, you know, the company is doing that, is trying, what the company is doing to overcome those challenges. All right, Charlie Thatch. This is a great question here by Charlie. It says, off topic, how hard do you think the real estate market will get hit? Any chance of crashing? Yeah, this is actually something I've been looking into actually quite a bit recently. I'm actually kind of like a real estate, I don't know what you call it, but I try to keep up to date with real estate over the years. And I follow some real estate type of experts, I think, in the area. And I'm always trying to figure out, get a pulse on where real estate is headed. Real estate does get hit. And again, it's this whole thing of, you know, this cycle. You have, you know, the whole shutdown leads to lower income, leads to whatever, all this stuff. But, you know, with the economic shutdown, loss of jobs, you have people with less income, with more uncertainty, they're less willing to take risks. So they're less willing to fork over, you know, a ton of money for a new house. There's less of a fear of missing out, right? If the market's not going up, then people tend to take a step back and wait for the market to go down, right? And then you have a waiting effect, right? People want it to go down further and further. Now, a few big questions with the real estate is, number one, what will the effect of the Fed's unlimited quantitative easing have on the real estate market? And yeah, I think it's a lot of this stuff is so complex and still yet to be seen, but I think somehow the Fed's money it oftentimes ends up, right, propping up certain equities and I think certain companies. And as a result, I think real estate in kind of the top markets, it will get hit some, but I don't think it'll get hit probably as much as real estate in the bottom markets. And the reason being is a lot of the people in the top markets, they still have their businesses, their jobs, whatever, their incomes, etc. The people in the bottom markets, they tend to lose their jobs, right? They don't have income, right? They don't have backstops as much. And the housing prices will probably go down lower, right, for those in lower incomes. Now, the situation is different in 2020 real estate versus, let's say, 2008 or so. In 2008, I was huge into the real estate market. Like, I was just like daily fixated on the real estate market because I've been following this guy, Bruce Norris, who is a California real estate timing expert. And he had predicted that the market would crash in 2008 to 2010 or so. And he predicted that like in 2005 or so. And I'd been following him and then I'd started to see the foreclosures happening. And this was before the whole, you know, economic shock of 2008. But back then, the situation was people had a ton of really risky loans out there, right? I mean, it was just a very, you know, bad situation with mortgages. In 2020, you don't have as much of that whole risky loan situation. So you don't have kind of like this huge bubble, I think, where you have a ton of people, you know, with bad mortgages. But you have a lot of unemployment, right? And so you have, and then you have this whole Fed, you know, quantitative easing whole thing. So you have a lot of things that are going on with real estate. And I think my expectations, you know, I see the top markets go down 15 to 20%. I see the bottom markets go down maybe 35 to 40%. There's going to be in-between markets. All depends on which real estate market you're looking at, right? The top markets, I'm talking about like the most desirable kind of coastal areas, et cetera, right? Maybe 15 to 20%. And then 35 to 40% maybe for others. Who knows? It all depends, right? In 6 months, in 2 months, maybe in 3 months, maybe my whole situation, my whole opinions are going to change because there's so many inputs and those inputs will change over time. But that's just kind of my current take on kind of the real estate market. Yeah. All right, hi Dave. How do you think oil prices could affect Tesla and TSLA? Yeah, I think you know, oil. You know, I shared this in a video. Check out my oil videos like last week or so. And I said that, you know, oil does impact electric cars in a sense. As if oil is dirt cheap, then it's cheaper to like the cost of ownership for an ICE car goes down, right? And it's less attractive to get an electric vehicle. Just like if oil was like, you know, $200, right, a barrel. Let's say gas was $10 a gallon, then EVs get more attractive, right? So it's either way. But I think, again, with Tesla's kind of fortunate situation, right, all these things that I mentioned in this today's talk, Tesla has a lot of advantages where they aren't necessarily reliant on low cost of oil or on high cost of oil to grow, right? They have great technology. They've got a lot of pent-up demand. And so I think Tesla, in a lot of ways, can do very well with oil at whatever price. All right, Adrian Farkas says, why did then TSLA crash so hard in March? Yeah, if you had followed kind of my videos back in March, and one of the things I was focusing a lot on was I was focusing a lot on the coronavirus situation. I was focusing a lot on the economic kind of risk of a systemic risk. And if you watch my videos back then, I was kind of focused because I thought it was important to really get a grasp of what was happening with the economy. And I think on March 23rd or so, when we hit that 18,500 or so, you had kind of the, at least in the past few months, the height of kind of the systemic risk factor, right? Like you saw the government wasn't stepping in hard enough or fast enough. You saw lots of things going down. You saw lots of industries being on the brink of just collapse. And yeah, it was the risk of systemic collapse, the risk of a growing kind of lengthy depression was growing at that time, and that brought down all equities, right? And when the Fed stepped in, right, and backstopped everything, then you had kind of like, you know, the resumption of, you know, back to people thinking that, you know, things aren't going to get that bad. Now, a big question going forward is there a systemic risk going forward, right? And the other question is like, yeah, what happens when other countries enter systemic risk? How does it affect the U.S.? And you have to look back into some of these like recent debt crises of different countries. And you have to wonder like, hey, these like tax revenue is going to be drying up for a lot of countries around the world. And if tax revenue dries up, then they have lower revenue. And if lower revenue and they increase their expenses, right, to stir up the economy, now you've got huge deficits, and the huge deficits will increase their debt. And with the increased debt, they have increased debt payments, but you have lower government revenue. And so now there's a loss of investor confidence. And it's kind of like similar to this house of pain, but for countries, right? And it leads to a higher cost to borrow. And now you have a debt crisis, right? You have this country that's struggling to survive. Like the US is kind of unique in a sense where supposedly like what 70% of the world's like savings or whatever is like in US dollars and stuff, so they can print money and kind of, you know, print their way out of a lot of things. Sure, it's going to lead to more problems in the future, but a lot of these other countries they don't have that printing kind of way out, at least in the short term. And so when they get hit big with a drop in revenues and an increase of expenses, then you have the potential for a debt crisis. And yeah, I'm kind of starting to think like, why aren't we going to see a lot of countries go into debt crises, right? And what will the U.S. have to do? I think they have to probably, because they're being affected too, they're probably going to have to print money, give it to the IMF or something. There's going to be massive propping up of governments around the world. And as you see countries going into default debt crises, that could affect, right, the whole stock market and our economy as well. We're not out of the woods yet, you know? I mean, there's a lot of different factors going forward. So if anyone says they know exactly what's going to happen in the future, like, you know, that's a big question mark. There's a lot of things that could happen and a lot of things to look out for. Alan Young says, will Tesla pull out of Berlin? I think it's a little bit too early for Tesla to pull out of Berlin. I think they'll still push forward. Germany, if you know anything about Germany, man, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of bureaucracy in Germany. I'm not saying it's like only Germany, but a lot of like certain countries have more bureaucracy than others, you know, and Germany has, you know, more bureaucracy typically than others, than average. And I think that's going to delay things. So I think Tesla's going to push ahead unless they really can't get through. All right, guys, what I'm going to do is this live stream has already gone on for quite a while. So I'm going to end here. And tomorrow for Tesla, we got earnings that are released, shareholder letters that's released after 1 p.m. Pacific time, probably within the first 10 minutes or so. You're going to see a big reaction in the stock market go up or down. Tesla's a volatile stock, man. You know, it's like its value is largely because of its projected earnings, right, and growth in the future. And how you view its growth and future really is subjective in a lot of different ways. And so you have a lot of volatility going. So I wouldn't be surprised with, you know, a good 50-point move either way, or even a 100-point move, you know, or it can even be more than that, right? We've seen much bigger moves than that. Over time, I've kind of been kind of numb to, you know, big moves. And so whether Tesla goes up 100 or 200 or something, it's not too big of a deal with a long-term perspective. But anyways, we'll go live again probably tomorrow, 2 p.m. Pacific time. I'll kind of highlight what I think the most important parts of the shareholder letter is. And then at 3:30 p.m., we have the earnings conference call with Elon Musk and the Tesla team. And then hopefully the next day, I'll go ahead and just kind of review my thoughts on the conference call and what I thought the impact was. All right, guys, thanks for joining me in this live call. I hope you have a great day, and we'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care. Bye.